From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. We got lots of work to do tonight, lots to talk about. Clint Van Zandt is here to start with. You know Clint as a former FBI agent, profiler, author, safety expert. Make sure and check out his webpage at livesecure.org and get that app, that important silent bodyguard for your BlackBerry, and you can get that on iTunes and, of course, at livesecure.org. Hi, Clint. Welcome to the show.
Hey, good evening, Dana. Thank you.
Lots to talk about. Let's get right at this. The Arizona prison escapees, they're actually hanging around my neck of the woods here, the Montana-Canadian border. I guess they caught one here yesterday or today, and there's still a couple of them out there. Let's get into that story.
Yeah, I figure that would be a story right up your neck of the woods, since it obviously is in your neck of the woods. As you know, a couple of weeks ago, three individuals, I shouldn't say busted out of a prison, they basically walked out. This is, you know, one of the many challenges in the United States is these privately run prisons, which, you know, my bone to pick is that, you know, on minimum security, low security, I think that's fine. But when you're guarding murderers, I think you need, you know, professional, sworn correction officers who can use firearms or anything else they may need. And in this case, of course, these individuals basically escaped because the girlfriend of one threw a pair of wire cutters over the fence. They cut the fence, got through three or four layers of security, probably as the guards were eating popcorn and watching old episodes of Hogan's Heroes, and these three guys got away. Subsequently, one, if not more, of them murdered a couple, a 61-year-old couple, probably to get money and firearms for them. Two of the fugitives have been caught, and one, a guy by the name of McCluskey, and his girlfriend/cousin are still on the run, and they're somewhere up along the border next to you right now.
Yeah, Montana-Canadian border, John McCluskey, 45, is convicted of attempted murder, and they all escaped from this privately run prison in Arizona. That part shocked me a little bit, and I've seen pictures of it now, and I've heard of this before, but Arizona has always portrayed, Clint, as a tough, no-nonsense state when it comes to crime. You know, all you have to do is think about Joe Arpaio and the other sheriffs down there. Let's get into more of that. With these privately run prisons, minimum security at best, somewhat. In fact, I even heard the comment Shangri-La for prisons tonight. This is certainly troubling. Is this a big problem in the United States?
I think it could very well become one. I think, you know, that the problem is when you have a privately run prison, just like, you know, we used to have before TSA, before, you know, the Professional Transport Security Agency, these airlines were responsible for the metal screening in the United States for weapons, et cetera. And unfortunately, they played to the lowest dollar denominator. They went for the lowest price person they could get, no matter their language skills or whether they knew how to work a magnetometer or not. And, you know, I don't want to paint these guards in too bad a picture, but they're not the same level as professional correction officers that you would find in a U.S. prison or you know, a Canadian national prison. There again, the salaries they pay at things, you have to think about the type of individuals that's going to bring on the job. And Dana, how do you punch through three layers of security, fences, motion detectors, and have hours go by, number one, before the guards know they're gone, and then multiple hours more go by before law enforcement officials are notified and the hunt begins? You and I know if somebody goes over the wall, or in this case through the fence, the quicker you get officers out there looking for them, the faster you bring them in. And because of that, you know, you have to say A is equal to B. Because they escaped, they were able to, unfortunately, murder this couple that they killed last week.
You can learn more about Clint's thoughts on this case by going to clintvanzant.newsvine.com. Clint, let's get into the mind of the escapees a bit. When you look at that and they're on the run, in fact, I heard a press release today from, or a soundbite today from one of them trying to encourage his buddy to turn himself in. How desperate are they? How worried should the public be?
Well, I think the worry is that the one remaining guy, this McCluskey, he was the one who has been forensically tied, probably by fingerprints or DNA, to the murder of this couple. So I think, you know, he, even though he wasn't convicted of murder, it appears now that he probably will be charged. And, you know, the interesting thing about him, Dana, too, is that he was only in that facility for 2 weeks before he got out. So he wasn't even there that long. But he, like the other two, allegedly were members of the Aryan Brotherhood, which, you know, is kind of the prison arm of the Aryan Nations.
Yep.
And when you get up to that part of the United States where they're at right now, you find Aryan Nation sympathizers. So, you know, they may be looking for some type of aid and assistance from, you know, other Aryans up there, too. Law enforcement has got a tremendous presence right now. You know, the Marshal Service in the United States is leading the investigation. They have anything from, you know, my former agency, the FBI, the Bureau of Indian Police. I mean, they've got everybody who's got a gun or car or a helicopter out there looking for this remaining couple. And the two that are left, this McCluskey and his girlfriend, cousin, Welsh, they're portraying themselves as Bonnie and Clyde. Well, you know, they may laugh about that, but most of us who ever saw the movie Bonnie and Clyde know how this story ends up.
Absolutely. In a hail of bullets, Clint Van Zandt is here, and we're talking about high-profile cases breaking in the news today. This Omar Thornton, another shooting. All of a sudden, racism gets thrown into this. Again, you can learn more about that case by going to clintvanzant.newsvine.com and see Clint's story there. Racism, the media seems to grab onto that. And I want to ask the first question, was it right or wrong to play the 911 call from him? I personally didn't have a problem with it. It's good education for the people just to show them what's out there.
Well, I mean, that's the reality of it. Most of us know that when we deal, you and I as individuals and your listeners, we have reality and we have perception of reality. Perception of reality always trumps. And in this particular case, whether there was or wasn't any aspect of racism, it believes that this individual, this mass murderer of eight and wounded two others before he killed himself, he allegedly believed there was. And of course, there are those who have risen up and said, you know, there have been men of color who work in that facility say, you know, we've never been the victim of racism. And there have been people who have said that Omar to say something like that was wrong, and that he had similar type problems in other facilities. You know, sometimes, Dana, you and I know you get a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you say, gee, people don't like me, and then if you say people don't like me because I'm black, green, brown, or yellow, his perception was that he was a victim of racism.
Right.
But, you know, that cuts both ways because all 10 of his victims happened to be Caucasians, happened to be whites. And, you know, that's another element of that case, too. And so we see that cut both ways in the United States. And, you know, in one of my articles that you suggest your readers take a look at, you know, I try to address that and say, you know, I hope, you know, if not my children, my grandchildren see a world sometimes where the first card we don't pull out of our deck, whether we're black, brown, you know, white, yellow, the first card isn't always the race card to justify what we do.
Exactly. Clint Van Zandt here, and we're talking about this Omar Thornton. As you know, he was a driver for a beer company or whatever it was, in Hartford Distributors, I think it was called, Manchester, Connecticut. And he had been accused of stealing beer. And we've seen so many workplace shootings like this, Clint. And what goes through the mind? You know, they replayed the 911 call, and he talked about how he wished he'd have been able to kill more. And, you know, some people, the stories I've seen, there's some people that are offended and afraid to hear that. I think, again, it's a reality check to see what's out there. But let's talk about the workplace and workplace violence like this. That potential is so great because you just, you know, you really have to expect the unexpected with some people.
Well, and the reality, too, is that when somebody comes in this guy's case, he already had 2 9-millimeter pistols in his lunchbox. So he knew full well in his mind that he would likely be terminated for, you know, they had a video that showed him stealing beer. I mean, that's pretty good evidence. So he knew about that, and he came in knowing that he would likely be given the alternative, either, you know, resign or be fired. So he had made up in his mind, Dana, what he was going to do, which was bring those 2 pistols in, and when it actually happened, ask to get a drink of water, pull those guns out, and then start firing again. And that's what we see many times, and I have handled dozens and dozens of violence in workplace situations. I help companies terminate individuals. You know, I assess the level of threat that they may present and then suggest how we should deal with the threat in a termination process, if in fact we can't save the person, and, you know, sending him or her through anger management courses or something like that. But when an individual already has that mindset, and, you know, you and I know, you know, from background of studying, in my case, you know, running the FBI's hostage negotiations program, when you see that coolness, you know that someone has already made that decision. When he was talking on the phone, there was no doubt in my mind, you know, had I heard that tape, I'd say this guy is going to kill himself, because that's what these individuals, unfortunately, will do. They make up their minds that they are going to punish the workplace and realize one of the people he shot was delivering condiments for the cafeteria. I mean, he didn't even work there, so he couldn't have held that man responsible for something because he didn't work there. He wasn't there during the day. All he did was take the guns and start firing away at any victim of opportunity he could see. But he knew in his mind, too, the resolution was going to be he was going to wind up and eat his own gun. And so many cases like this, you see that anger, rage, frustration just boiling over. But then they also make the decision that they won't be answerable to society, and they kill themselves. And it's always a sad situation. And you always wish it could have been resolved. But, Dana, the one thing I would say is that there are always signs. There are always indications where an individual is getting emotional. There are signs that he is challenged, that she is undergoing these stressors. And what happens in a workplace many times is that people just, they ignore those signs. They overlook them. People just don't snap. I really don't believe that. I believe there are always emotional precursors that are there, and that's where I think in the workplace we need to train our managers and our first level supervisors to understand what those signs are so we can head off situations like this.
Absolutely. Clint Van Zandt is here. Another story that you'll find at clintvanzandt.newsvine.com is mothers who murder children. And, you know, when I see the picture of Andrea Yates here and the other cases that I've covered over the years, and now we have a new one out of Edinburgh, Scotland, Teresa Rigi, I believe. You know, how tragic is this when the mother will take their own children's life? Those are stories that get to me. When I see kids, little kids, lose their lives like this, and moms, and, you know, we hear the depression, the postpartum, all that sort of stuff. Let's talk about this case.
Well, you know, there are different reasons why mothers kill their own children. Realize that in the United States, that's not necessarily that uncommon.
No.
There's a large percentage of the women who are sitting on death row right now in America that are there because they kill their own children. And again, hundreds of children become the victims, you know, at the hands of their parents every year. But it's the mother, I think, that always bothers us. I mean, you know, this is the person that gave birth to you. You know, you and I as parents and grandparents and caregivers, I mean, most of us would lay down our life to save the life of a child, especially the life of our own child.
Yep.
And when you see someone, when you see that primary caregiver, the mother, take the life, you have to, you know, the question screams why. And, you know, you mentioned a couple of cases. Number one, Andrea Yates. Well, Andrea Yates, of course, was the woman who drowned her 5 children in Texas, she had her own monsters inside of her head. She believed that her children were going to encounter some type of problems in later life. So she, in her challenged psychotic mind, thought she was saving the children by drowning them. But, you know, that goes further, too. There have been some who suggested that her doctor told her that, you know, she shouldn't have more than three children, and her husband persevered and wanted more. So, you know, does the husband have responsibility there, too? And I would say usually, yeah. I mean, he's supposed to be sensitive to her needs. And then you have someone like Susan Smith, the young mother in the Carolinas, who about 1994 was breaking up with her husband and wanted a new boyfriend, but the new boyfriend didn't want an instant family, didn't want two children. So Susan, in her attempt to make herself more marketable, took her two children that were strapped in car seats and drove the car into a lake and let the children drown. And while I was in the behavioral science unit at the time that happened, and we told the sheriff's office, we said, look, women usually go for soft kills on their children. In this particular case, she said the car was hijacked by an African-American. That's going to turn out to be a lie. Look for the car in a body of water. That's where she would do it. Well, that was her, but the story you just talked about now, this Teresa Riggi, I mean, she actually, she had twins and then twin boys and an older girl. Dana, she cut the throats of these children, all three. She cut the throats of the children and then turned the gas on in her apartment in the United Kingdom, and then set that afire, blowing up the apartment and diving out the window, trying to make it appear as if her children might have been a victim of something like that. So here we have three different levels of murder, of killing one's children. One because they were just, you know, as Freud would say, crazy. Another because they saw a utilitarian purpose, perhaps, to it, to get rid of them. And the third, in this woman's case, in the UK, I think she was trying to punish her husband, and she also wanted to make sure that, you know, it's the old, I'm going to make sure you can't have them because I'm not going to let you win. Well, she was going to kill, in fact, she killed her own children. But Dana, as I say in my article, you know, that goes back almost, those that read history, you know, a third century, back when you read about Jason and the Argonauts, it was Jason's wife who killed, and, you know, of course that's mythology, but in that story, she killed her two young sons that were, you know, her sons by Jason, because he was out running around with a princess, with the daughter of a nearby king. So she wanted to punish him, and she did it by killing. So what I find so interesting is there, back in the third century, we even understood that women not only kill their own children, but can do it sometimes as a way to punish the biological father.
Yeah, and it's unbelievable. And all we got to do is think of most recent stories, the Anthony's, poor Kyron Horman, who knows where he is. And we could do 2 hours on this. But listen, Clint, I appreciate you coming on. Clint's website, livesecure.org. And we'll talk to you again soon, my friend.
Thanks, Dana. Be safe.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's Clint Van Zandt. And if you want to bring on an expert to talk about cases, he's been there. He's done that. And I don't know. Those are three cases that are mind-boggling, especially to see these young kids and their mother take their lives. I'll never in all my life be able to fathom that. You're listening to Scared Monkeys Radio. My name is Dana Pretzer. We're going to come back with a clinical psychiatrist, Dr. Dale Archer. You know him. You see him on all the cable news shows. And we're going to talk more about these same high-profile cases and try to get into the head of some of these people that take lives. I'm Dana Pretzer. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. My name's Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. Dr. Dale Archer will join us in just a second. You know him from the Dr. Dale Archer Show. Check out his webpage at drdalearcher.com. The doctor's just Dr. Dale Archer, all one word, drdalearcher.com. Of course, you see Dale on all the cable news shows. Talking about high-profile cases. Have I got you there, Doc?
You got me. I'm back. Sorry.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing very good. How are you?
I'm good. Now, before we get into this workplace shooting with Omar Thornton, I want to talk to you a little bit about, and the media is laughing at this a little bit, and I don't think there's anything really funny. Is this crazy flight attendant who some will say just lost it, I think there's probably some deep-rooted issues even before this happened. Do people, Dr. Dale Archer, actually snap in a situation like this, throw out the emergency chute, grab some beer with you? And I think when the guy was arrested, allegedly he was having sex, and he just, the media's just not handling this one right. At least I don't think so. Am I wrong?
Well, it's a story, I think, that captivates anybody who flies
yep.
a lot, and I do. And I think that anytime you're in that environment, there comes a time in these situations. I mean, I've been held on the runway for 5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I've had to circle around for 2 hours and land in a city that's 500 miles away from where I'm going. I think that the frustration level can just build and build to the point where you want to start screaming at everyone in the plane.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you read about something like this, where it's a flight attendant who actually worked there and then just snapped and starts yelling and screaming and then finally says, I'm out of here,
yep.
and takes off out the door, then I think there's a little bit in all of us that's like, yeah, I understand that. But all that being said, clearly there had to be more to this story than we know. And whether it was something that was going on in the personal life, whether there had been problems before with the employment or with the bosses, something had to be happening. And this was literally the straw that broke the camel's back. But this is not the whole story.
I couldn't agree more. Dr. Dale Archer's here. Check out his webpage at drdalearcher.com. Exactly. Hey, I've been on airplanes too, and the frustration level is just unbelievable. But is there not a higher standard or a higher level of expectation from those, the flight attendants, the pilots, the people in the airports? Let's talk about what I do besides this, a police officer, doctors, lawyers, you name it, where sometimes you have to wear your emotions on your sleeve and you can't let out how you really feel. Or like I say, do people sometimes just snap?
Well, sometimes people do just snap. And clearly anyone who is in the business, such as a flight attendant, is expected to be well-trained and to understand that, look, you are going to have irate passengers. You are going to have, as in this case, someone who bumps into you and then refuses to apologize.
Right.
So those things do happen. But on the other hand, I got to tell you that what I'm seeing across the board here, and it's not only in my flying, but because I'm seeing it everywhere where people aren't as friendly. People are more on edge. People are just angry, and it all comes down to the economy. I mean, the economy is something that no one understands what a stressful situation that can be, but it really defines everything that we do. If you're scared of losing your job, if you don't have a job, if you're not getting paid what you think you should be, if you're having to work in a job you don't like, if you have notes and bills and a house, a mortgage that you can't afford, all of these things add up. And so I am seeing across the board that the niceness in people is starting to fray. And I think this is an extreme example, but I notice it every day. I notice it with the flight attendants when I fly. I notice it with waiters and waitresses when I'm at a restaurant.
Yeah.
I notice with people in the service industry. It just seems to me that across the board, a toll is being taken on our psyche.
Yeah, there's a frustration level that's unbelievable. And I tell you, being in public service for as long as I've been, 28 years now, some people sit back and they laugh at the comment about the full moon. And I don't know if there's any scientific evidence to back it up, but you get a hot night and you have a full moon. I can tell you, those in public service like myself and you, it brings out the worst in people. And am I, again, just making that up?
Nope, you're not making it up. And I used to be in internal medicine. I used to work in emergency rooms. And there wasn't a doubt in my mind that when the moon got full, we were going to see a marked spike in visitors. When I was working in a psychiatric hospital and we took admissions around the clock, when the moon was full, that's when we got the most patients. Right?
Yep.
You talk to police officers, they'll tell you the same thing.
Yep.
No doubt that we don't know why that's the case, but it's I don't know anyone out there who works in those fields who would say, oh, no, it's not real. So it's a true phenomenon, but I think that, you know, that's just one more example, I guess, of forces that can affect us that really we don't understand. But I think that with the economy, it's something people don't understand because people never think in those terms. But that is a really real and definable issue, which I see getting worse and worse, and no one's talking about the toll on our psychology. Yep. They talk about the toll on our financial well-being, but that has a direct effect on who we are and how we act.
Well, I tell you, the money situation affects everyone, myself included, and you're right. It is so true. And let's segue right into Omar Thornton. Again, a shooting, someone who is accused of stealing beer, getting fired, having his union represent him. Of course, he brings up the racist card. There's a lot of criticism about the media playing some of the 911 call, but I think it's a good reality check for people to hear this. I want to get your thoughts on this Omar Thornton shooting case. And you know what? I bet you there's an economic situation involved in that, too. He just, you know, probably didn't know what he was going to do. No job, no money. Of course, there's, I'm sure, a lot more to it than just that.
Yeah, I think there's a lot more to it. And I think that, honestly, the economy probably did play a role here because of the fact that if everything that he was saying is true, that he was in this awful job and that no one liked him there and that he was discriminated against and they were saying things to him and writing things on the bathroom wall, well, then in normal times, of course, you get up and you leave and you go get another job. But if you research his history, you see that this is a guy who had bounced around to several different jobs over the last few years. So, yeah, on the one hand, I think we're saying that, okay, this is a guy that is really not that stable to begin with. And at the end of the day, I just have a hard time buying the race card being the reason that this guy went on this rage, because clearly he was targeting managers, but when they analyze it, a lot of these people really had no contact or interaction and had no responsibility for him at all in the chain of command. And then you couple the fact that, look, he was caught on video stealing from the company. Now, what company could possibly take any other action at that point except termination? So I think that there's a lot more than meets the eye here, but at the end of the day, I think the racial aspect that has been just exploded in the media across the board, in my opinion, is really not the primary issue. I think it was a disturbed guy. He had problems before. He had a poor work history prior to joining this company, and eventually he snapped. But to try to put all the blame and say, oh, he was forced into it because of the racial discrimination, to me, just really misses the big picture.
Dr. Dale Archer's here. Let's talk a little bit about his 911 call being released. We're seeing and hearing more of that in the media lately. In fact, even up here in Canada, where it's very rare, there's a mass serial killer in BC named Picton, and they've since released, and Canada's usually pretty liberal when it comes to this stuff, released his confession or in interrogation tapes to the media, and of course the media jump all over it, are playing bits of it. Is this a good thing, or is it just simply the media grabbing something because they know they're going to get ratings from it?
Well, I think it's a good story, clearly. And you take that 911 call, and you accept it as fact, and then you write a story about it, and you post it, and you do commentary on it. Well, that's going to attract viewers, and that's going to attract readers. I mean, that's interesting stuff.
Yep.
So I think the media just jumped on it and used it. But I've done some research on this. You start looking back at this guy's history. I mean, this guy had issues, especially employment-related issues, going back for quite a while. So I think that really you take a snapshot of it and the 911 call, and you say, oh, my God, well, of course he did it. The poor guy was just tormented to death. And when in reality, as I said, This is a guy with issues. This is a guy with past problems, past employment problems. And in the end, racism alone does not cause a guy to snap and to kill eight people. And I just think that I wish the media that was covering it would tell the backstory.
Yeah.
Would really try to paint the whole picture here, because that's not what you're getting.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Dale Archer's here. Probably the biggest issue that I see personally, from a perspective as a host and what I do in my other life, is workplace violence and signs, training. What should an employer look for? Obviously, like we've both talked about, and the guest previous to you talked about, this guy's had issues for some time now. What can people do in these sorts of situations where they think they may have someone that they're worried about or signs that they should look for to try and maybe prevent something from this, like this, happening again?
Well, of course, the danger zone is always the time of termination. And typically when people snap, in these cases, it's when they have been terminated. So I think that number one across the board is recognition. You have to understand that if you have an employee that you have to terminate against their will for any reason, that is always a potential for violence. So that's number one. And, you know, in big companies, they get this because they have human resource departments and they have employee assistance programs, and they are tuned in to the fact that you can't just tell a guy, we caught you stealing, don't let the door hit you on the way out, but get out of here.
Yeah.
You got to be able to sit them down. You got to be able to talk to them. You got to be able to feel out exactly what their mindset is at that time. And it could be that in certain cases, if there's a red flag, perhaps you need to get security of the company involved, or maybe even an off-duty police officer to come and to be present. But the recognition factor doesn't look like it was here at all, because it's a small company, and it's really hard for a small company to have the resources to understand and know that whenever you let someone go, there is a very delicate period of time when they can snap, not necessarily in a violent way. Sometimes they become very cheerful and very depressed, and they may say that I'm going to kill myself. But that's an emotional time. And in these bad economic times, it can be that much worse. So, you know, the education is key, but again, the big companies with the big HR departments and EAPs know all of that. They understand that there is a right way and a wrong way to terminate someone. Now, we don't really have too many details on how this took place, but it just lets everyone know that terminating someone is a very devastating event, and you have to understand and be in tune to their emotions, because they can run the gamut.
Dale Archer's here for about two more minutes. I want to get your thoughts quickly on Kyron Horman. And I know I'm surprising you with this question, but this poor little kid, this story has gone every which way, and the media has slowed down on it a little bit. But here we are, another case. You know, you can think of Anthony, and you can think of all these other cases where mothers allegedly, or in this case maybe a stepmother, and there's a case in Scotland we were just talking about here where a mother killed her children, actually slit their throats. Why are we seeing so many cases of these young children losing their lives, and in some cases from their own mother? You would think, you know, the maternal instinct, protect your children at all costs, all this sort of stuff. But there's a lot of cases where moms killed their kids.
Well, I have to tell you, Dana, that, yeah, this is a huge, huge issue. And I wish we had more time to talk about it, maybe at some point in the future. But the bottom line is very interesting when you look at women who kill. And women are about 10 times less likely than men to commit murder. However, the motives are completely different. Men kill for money, power, revenge. Perhaps they're committing a crime and they get caught and they don't want to have to, you know, get arrested. So they have a whole host of reasons, but women kill for love. You look at the people that women kill, and almost invariably, it's a lover, past or present, it's a parent, or it's a child. It's someone that's in their life and that they know. So this if indeed the stepmom is responsible here, of course, we don't know that for sure, but if she is, this would be right in line with why a woman kills. And I think that what we're seeing across the board now is these cases are starting to get legs, and they're starting to come before the public perception. But because the bottom line is, men are 10 times more likely to kill. That's 10 times more murders committed by men than women. So the sheer numbers indicate that we're going to be talking more about men than women. But the fascinating aspect of the women who kill and the relationships that are involved is just something that really is coming to light now for the first time. And it's fascinating.
We'll have to do another show on that. You're right. It's a big topic. Listen, Dr. Dale Archer, I appreciate your time, sir, and we'll talk again soon, my friend.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Take care. Bye-bye. Bye. That's Dr. Dale Archer, clinical psychiatrist. He has his own show, the Dr. Dale Archer Show. You see him on all the cable news shows as an analyst. And check out his webpage at drdalearcher.com. We're going to be right back with current NBC news analyst, former ADA out of Los Angeles County, Robin Sachs. And we'll see if, was she on the plane with this crazy flight attendant? She travels lots, you know. It's always interesting to see where Robin is next. And that will come up here next on the Dana Pretzer Show. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. You know, Robin Sachs is a former DA out of Los Angeles County, author, NBC news analyst. Check out her webpage at www.robinsachs.com and her book, It Happens Every Day, and other books are there, and Sachs Facts, and you name it. And it's, we kid around a lot to, when I have Robin on, because I've interviewed her from, I think she's been in washrooms and train stations, under boardwalks. Were you on the airplane when the flight attendant went nuts and took the beer and slid down the slide?
No, but let me tell you, with my odds of flying, you would think that there would have been a decent shot at it, but no, it was not.
Well, you know, one of the guests I cherry-picked from Justice Interrupted, Dale Archer, was just on, and I was asking him about people like this flight attendant, and I want to get your thoughts on that, too. The media, I want to go back and clarify that, are kind of glorifying this guy a little bit. And I think that's wrong. Yeah, the story's funny in parts, but we also have an expectation of those on airplanes to, you know, the staff, the pilots, the flight attendants to, you know, have a higher standard and be able to handle some things. But Robin, you've flown probably more than anybody I know in my life. Sometimes it gets pretty frustrating on an airplane. Is this legit that this guy actually snapped, or are there big issues that we just don't know about?
Listen, I think that the parts where there's a lot of notoriety, it becomes, you know, there's notoriety. We've talked about this before, celebrities who do criminal behavior, which makes them notorious for their criminal conduct, and then there's those criminals that become celebrities. And if you didn't have kind of facts, as we've seen before, i.e. the, you know, barefoot bandits and balloon yeah. boy and all those other kinds of things, and even the geezer bandit that we talk about, those are, you know, the media helping create the buzz of someone who would otherwise be what we just call a nut. And if you put that same, you know, flight attendant in, you know, a post office or in the DMV or whatever, you would be talking about grave concerns for the public's safety. So, you know, we have to always, the bottom line being is that you have to look to the crime. You have to look at the behavior and whether legitimate, not legitimate, or whatever, or frankly, understandable or not understandable, the behavior amounts to a crime, and he's a criminal just like any other criminal.
Yeah, that's true. Robin Sachs is here. I won't spend any more time with this guy. It's just, it's amazing, you know, the stories day after day. All you got to do is turn on the cable and you'll see every goofy story imaginable. But then we still have the missing, like poor little Kyron Horman. Your thoughts on where that case is going?
Well, you know, it's still unbelievable to me that we, as we sit here today with each new piece of bombshell evidence, as our good friends over on Headline News would say, you know, today's news revelation that the police released the picture of Terry with what appeared to be another adult in the car, and there's been some question as to whether or not that was the friend that was summoned early on, yet there has not been any discussion that we knew of by Terry of this friend. And then in addition to that, then coupled with the fact that there's now been the revelation of a motive in terms of poor Corman's dad. Corman's dad got into a fight with Terry about not allowing her to have her teenage son live in the house and him wanting her move, so giving rise to a motive. So you start putting all this together with everything else that we have, and you still, I still sit here saying, okay, so why aren't there charges? Why haven't they? I mean, how much more probable cause do you need? I mean, I understand where there may be some legitimate pieces of investigation still going on, but certainly the way it's stacking, there's no other suspects. We're not even, the sheriffs aren't calling her a suspect, but she is.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second. The difference between probable cause, and we've talked about this before, and beyond a reasonable doubt. A lot of people don't understand the difference. We hear grand juries, and this person testified, why haven't the police made arrests? They say there's probable cause, but they're not doing anything. And so the media grabs this, kind of makes the cops look bad, but then you got to sit back and wonder, those that have the training, why are they taking so long? What is the difference between probable cause and that beyond a reasonable doubt?
Well, it's a huge difference in terms of standard. Beyond a reason, I mean, and the unfortunate thing is we end up describing beyond a reasonable doubt and probable cause kind of against each other,
right,
in order to talk about them as to be able to show the difference. But beyond a reasonable doubt is the most besides one of the most undefined terms out there, it's also the term that is misdefined by either attorney in closing arguments, being prosecutor or defense attorney, to a jury. It is the number one basis for cases to be reversed. So you have to be very careful how you describe beyond a reasonable doubt. There, you know, lots of the jury instructions call it that feeling of, you know, beyond certainty or moral conviction, blah, blah, blah. But the idea of being kind of like it's almost like pornography, though. It's like you know it when you see it. It's not imaginary doubt. It's not, you know, Martians coming down. It's something that will, you know, that's considered the highest standard of proof. And then if you go and compare that, before we even get into probable cause, get into preponderance of evidence, which is the standard in civil courts to be able to prove a case. And all you need to do is show slightly more than 50%. So you kind of put this balancing of the scale thing, and all you need is the slightest little tilt, and you've got your preponderance of the evidence. And in between those two benchmarks are what we know as probable cause, and also another standard called clear and convincing evidence. And probable cause is the standard that one can use, or a police officer can use, to arrest. It's also the standard in which some of the search and seizure rules and requirements get triggered. But the bottom line is it's not needing to be able to prove to 12 people beyond a reasonable doubt. It's a much lesser standard. And so, again, and know it when you feel it. And in this case, you know, there's enough evidence that would be to support the arrest. Which is what the basis is for what you need to have in order to arrest on a felony is probable cause, and you have the probable cause.
Robin Sachs is here. Her webpage is www.robinsachs.com. I just saw Nancy Grace on Bill O'Reilly tonight. We got to see Robin Sachs on Bill O'Reilly one of these days, or have to start a petition or something. The crime shows that we see on television are basically Jane Velez Mitchell and Nancy Grace, and there's a few others that grab the headline now and then. Jim Murray does a good job on Entertainment Tonight, bring Robin Sachs on every so often. But do we need another crime show? I think we need more crime shows on TV, too, because the people definitely are interested. Look at this Omar Thornton, the crazy guy at the beer place that went nuts and shot his coworkers, cried racism, and all that. There's so many stories and stories and stories and stories out there, but the media seems to be obsessed with, you know, politics, and they might grab the odd one. You know, the run with Lindsay Lohan for 2 weeks steady, but some of these other stories need more coverage, I believe.
I absolutely agree with you, and especially given the fact that how much and how a part of the criminal justice system the public has become. And because of media and because of the internet, there are people who are in touch with you know, have the ability to take the model from John Walsh's America's Most Wanted and take it to a completely new level when you start, you know, entering the blogosphere and the, you know, internet radio and all these other social networking resources. But there is still no substitute for good old-fashioned TV. And the shows that make headline news so, you know, that drive the ratings are James Love Mitchell and Nancy Grace. And frankly, it's really sad to me that we used to have Greta on Fox doing a lot of the same beat. And we also had Geraldo, of course, doing a lot of covering that same beat. And unfortunately, Geraldo's only doing it a couple times a week, which is on the weekend. Fox has turned predominantly political, and you know, maybe Bill O'Reilly will get into it here and there, but in terms of the day in and day out coverage that is needed to keep these cases alive in order to remind the people about what is going on is in critical, and you can't see that in any more case clearer than we can in these Arizona escapees that left, you know, ran away from custody. Those were cases that, because of recognition on television, and you're talking people who would have great ability to fly and so forth, have and flee and all over the place, you know, were, you know, the first person was caught due to the through television and media.
Yeah, you need the media, that's for sure. And the guy and his cousin slash girlfriend are running around actually up near my neck of the woods. But when you see that story, and did it shock you a little bit, these private prisons, the lack of security? I was surprised a little bit with Arizona supposedly being such a tough law and order state that these guys were, you know, able to basically walk out the way they did.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it never ceases to amaze me. And actually in Arizona, more than in most places, because Arizona is so law and ordered, so law and order, and also prides itself on a tough criminal justice system. But the fact of the matter is that anybody, any system, you know, I mean, if we looked at the truth of the White House crasher, as opposed to you know, Diane Diamond's version, which I am really fascinated to read on another level. But if you think if it can happen at the White House, why wouldn't it be able to happen in Arizona?
Exactly. Her name is Robin Sachs. The webpage is www.robinsachs.com. You'll see her on Entertainment Tonight. Let's see if I get this right. The Insider, NBC, all the cable news shows, Larry King.
Okay, be quiet. We're done with you.
and probably walking through many airports as you can find her. Anyway, listen, my dear, always a pleasure, and we'll catch you again next week.
Likewise. Thank you for having me. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's Robin Sachs, robinsachs.com. Hey, sign up to the Sachs Facts Weekly. You can do that right at robinsachs.com to learn more about the high-profile cases that she's working on with NBC and some of the other things that Robin is talking about. 15 years as a felony DA in Los Angeles. She has a few stories to tell. That's it. That's tonight's show. I hope you enjoyed it. Our webpage is www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. There you can listen to the show live, pick up podcasts of past shows, daily commentaries, leave comments, whatever you like. Thank you. We'll see you again real soon here on The Dana Pretzer Show.
You've been listening to The Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.